2003, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services acquired a patent for, quote, cannabinoids as antioxidants and neuroprotectants. It's pretty easy to find this with Google. There's many medical uses of marijuana and have been for many thousands of years. The doctor is misinformed.
Hey, I just want to leave a comment about the medical marijuana news show that was just on. Just state the obvious. I mean, it's a natural herb that grows from the ground, and it should be legalized. That's it. Thanks.
Hello, this is Mark Smith, Duncan Campbell's guest yesterday, Irvine Laszlo on Living Dialogues, was a particularly hopeful dialogue. Mr. Laszlo is reminding us that we are not going to go through the 2012 event without help. And we have, as he pointed out, we have help from the inside, our higher mentality, our higher emotions, our higher centers that are already in us, as long as we make the connections to them, as well as we have outer help in the form of a resource like the Akashic Records, which do indeed exist. And as I reminded Duncan Campbell a few years ago, that the 2012 event, based on the lifespan of our existing solar system, has occurred more than 800,000 times already. So there's nothing to fear about this, but we're going to use it to reestablish our age of responsibility to humanity, the planet, and our place, at least in our particular galaxy. And so there. That's that was a very nice show, and I was able to renew my membership and get a copy of Irvin Laszlo's book for that. Thank you. Bye.
And that's our comment line. It's 8:30. Call us 303-449-4885. Here's BBC.
BBC News with Eileen McHugh. The war crimes trial of the former Bosnian Serb leader Radovan Karadzic has resumed in The Hague, even though he is again boycotting the proceedings. The trial judge said the court would decide later whether to appoint a lawyer to represent him. Mr. Karadzic faces 11 charges, including genocide and crimes against humanity. A former Bosnian Serb leader, once known as the Iron Lady for her hardline views, has been released from prison after serving 6 years for crimes against humanity. The woman, Biljana Plavšić, was the highest-ranking official from the former Yugoslavia to plead guilty to charges relating to the Bosnian conflict. The Church of Scientology in France and one of its leaders have been found guilty of organised fraud. The case was brought by a woman who said she was approached in the street by a member of the church and then tricked into paying $28,000 for a range of products, books and vitamins. The Church of Scientology, which was founded in 1954 by the late science fiction writer Ron Hubbard, says it will appeal against the conviction. The Constitutional Court in the Czech Republic is deciding whether to remove one of the final obstacles to the Lisbon Treaty on European reform coming into force. The Czech Republic is the only EU country that hasn't approved the treaty, which streamlines the way the organisation is run. The court is to rule on whether the treaty infringes Czech sovereignty. Some news just in. NATO forces in Afghanistan say 8 American soldiers have been killed in bomb attacks in the south of the country. Details are still coming in. South Africa and Lesotho have both been ranked higher than Germany, Britain and the United States in a global survey of equality between men and women. The annual survey assesses how successful countries are in boosting equality in areas such as jobs, education, health and political rights. South Africa came in 6th place and Lesotho in 10th, ahead of Germany, Britain and the US, which was ranked in 31st place. BBC News.
BBC News headlines bringing us up to 8:32 this morning. Thanks for tuning in to Community Radio KGNU Boulder, Denver. It's going to be warmer today than in the coming days. Expect a high today around 51 degrees. Some showers expected later on, but definitely cooling off. Expect a high on Wednesday of only 31 degrees and snow. So definitely getting cooler, but it's a wonderful day for you to show your support for community radio. If you're tuning in for the headlines from BBC or the local news in the morning magazine or Jim Hightower, we had Jim Hightower live just before BBC, so we won't hear his commentary today. He'll be back as usual with his commentary tomorrow. And don't forget that Jim Hightower will be joining us live in the metro area in February. We'll be giving details of that as they emerge. It's all possible because of you, our listener members. Be the next caller. 303-449-4885 is the number to call. People have been calling in. People have been taking Amy Goodman's latest book, Breaking the Sound Barrier, as their thank you gift. And indeed, some other people taking the Vandana Shiva DVD. That was the video, the DVD of her recent talk in Boulder. It just happened just over a week ago. It's yours as a thank you gift when you pledge your support. Maybe Ralph Nader's new book. It is all possible when you call us, 303-449-4885. Be the next caller. It's just coming up on 8:34. At 9 o'clock, we'll be going to Alan Watts. But right now, it's time for How on Earth.
I'm Joel Parker.
And I'm Chip Granditz.
And this is How on Earth for Tuesday, October 27th, 2009.
Coming up, Franz De Waal on Nature's Lessons for a Kinder Society. Morning. This is a special edition of How on Earth, and we bring to you today a blockbuster interview with Franz De Waal, a world-renowned primatologist who Time magazine in 2007 selected as one of the world's most influential people. He has a new book just out a couple of weeks ago called The Age of Empathy, and the subtitle is Nature's Lessons for a Kinder Society. This has become a pretty hot book. We was just recently interviewed on Science Friday. It was interesting. I went to his Facebook page, and he said interview was really more of a series of call-ins and questions, which I wasn't expecting, but at least there were no creationists, so it was okay. I think this is a great interview. As you may have heard, KGNU did not make its goal for the fall pledge drive, so if you did not get an opportunity to call in and support the station, please do so now. We have some volunteers in the hallway. Give us a call at 303-449-4885.
That's right, Chip. We have volunteers waiting to take your call. And additionally, we have this book, Age of Empathy, to offer to people who call in and pledge. We have a very limited number of copies. If you would like a copy of this book as part of your thank you from the station, do call us at 303-449-4885. We also have an extended version of this interview that does not have Colin in it, does not have creationists in it, as what happened on Science Friday. It is a straight interview with Franz De Waal talking about one of the most important issues of our time. Are we as human beings, are we as part of the primate species, animals that are just territorial, that are just ready to attack each other, or is this this quality of empathy that is innate and who we are? Is that why we build communities like KGNU?
It makes you wonder how that translates into human behavior, you know, looking at the primates and the infighting, and how that translates to perhaps, you know, Wall Street, for example, and other aspects where there's fighting in a more general term.
Indeed. You know, those of you who just came from the news programming that aired earlier on the morning magazine heard about that. And many scientists are, you know, somewhat timid. They say, I have my small little domain that I work in, and I come up with my hypothesis, and I verify them, and it's up to someone else to draw any conclusions from that. Well, not Franz De Waal. He's going to open with talking about Wall Street. Part of the extended interview that didn't make airtime today, he talks about the U.S. response to Hurricane Katrina. And look, so if you're a typical How on Earth listener, We don't want to talk up the book so much. I want to get right to the interview. If you appreciate this kind of programming, while you're listening to this interview, Franz DeWall, please call in. We want to leave as much time for the program to do this interview, so I'm just going to tell you a little bit more about him. He's a Dutch-born biologist, currently a professor of psychology, and director of the Living Links Center, where he observes primate behavior at the Yerkes National Primate Research Center at Emory University near Atlanta, Georgia. His new book, The Age of Empathy, invites the reader to contemplate nature's lessons for a kinder society. Please.
We'll go to that interview now. Remember this phone number, though, 303-449-4885. Here's the interview.
To show how lazy I am, I'm going to do a very short excerpt from your book. In fact, I'm going to read only the first six words from the preface, which says, greed is out, empathy is in. Now, you know, if you were a media pundit, the bar would simply be say something that is grammatically correct and at least not logically self-contradictory. But as a scientist, I'm going to hold you to a higher standard. That's a pretty brash assertion, so take a few minutes to outline the case for how you can back that up.
Well, greed is out means that we have been disappointed by the, let's say, purely competition-based economy and by the way it was handled in Wall Street and all the bonuses, which are still going on in Wall Street. Mm-hmm. And so I think greed has become less popular. Greed is never going to disappear, and I don't think we want it to disappear, actually. But it's not as popular as it used to be, and that's what I mean by it's out, is that we are considering that what we did in the economy was maybe not so successful. And empathy is in. Well, that relates to the fact that in this society, in the United States, there is a sort of reorientation going on, which of course started with the election of a Democratic president, which was already a reorientation by itself along partisan lines. And then this new president has mentioned empathy many times. For example, he mentioned it when he wanted to have a Supreme Court nominee. He mentioned it in relation to the healthcare debate. And so empathy is high on his list of words that he uses. And I think in society as a whole, people are now more interested in what can we do to improve the society, and is solidarity and empathy, does that need to be part of it?
And so your background, though, is not exactly as an economist. You're a primatologist and a professor of psychology. I see from the cover of the book that you work at something called the Living Links Center at Yerkes National Primate Research Center. Tell me a little bit about what that center is about and what you do for work.
Well, my work is on the primate behavior and also elephant behavior and some other animals, but mainly primates and how it relates to human behavior. So I look at human behavior, and this book is very much, half of it is on human behavior. I look at human behavior from the perspective of biology, so to speak, like how did things evolve, where do they come from, what kind of connections exist between human behavior and animal behavior. And empathy is an interesting area because we used to be comparing humans usually aggressive behavior with that of animals. And so as soon as humans do something bad, we say they're acting like animals. But actually, if humans do something nice and kind and nurturing, they're also acting like animals in many ways. And so I try to expose those connections and explain where empathy comes from, because I think it's a very old mammalian characteristic.
Okay, well, let me talk about what I think might be a typical layperson's vague understanding of primate behavior. I think we all know this term from science called the alpha male, and it's this idea that there is one among the group, usually a male, that runs the whole show, gets their pick of the women, gets first pick at the food, and rules by force, and that rule is around as long as he can kick the butt of every other primate in the group, and there's always an enterprising young male waiting for the first signs of old age and weakness and his opportunity to take power in an often brutal and bloody combat. Isn't that where some people get the idea of why there has to be sort of a winner-take-all society?
Yeah, but that's already a very big simplification of what is happening in, let's say, a chimpanzee group. In a chimpanzee group, yes, there is usually a male who's at the top. That male is usually not alone at the top, in the sense that there's no male who can on his own dominate a whole group of chimpanzees. So he needs supporters. He needs females who like him and support him. He needs other males who like him and support him. And the supporters need to get a deal from him. That's all very well documented, both in the field and in captivity, is that males who are high-ranking, they become very generous. It's like a bribing system almost, like they share meat specifically with those individuals who help their position. It becomes like politics. And I actually wrote a book called Chimpanzee Politics on this particular issue. It's not like he imposes his dominance on the group. To some degree, it's granted by the group. And if the group doesn't like a particular leader anymore, if he becomes brutal or he appropriates too many females or too much food or whatever, they kick him out. And they may actually kill him. And that has happened also in the field and in captivity. And so the alpha male is alpha male to some degree by consent of the group. And the group needs to like him and needs to like his leadership, otherwise he's not going to be alpha male for very long. So it is already much more complex if you start looking at that. And then in addition, not all of group life is along hierarchical lines or aggressive lines. It's not all regulated by who can beat whom, because there's also support structure, there's a family structure, there's a friendship structure. And chimpanzees are actually very strong in what we call reciprocity, is that if I do you a favor, you do me a favor. And so there's a lot of deal-making going on that is much more complex than just a hierarchy.
But empathy, you know, now the careful listener might say, you know, wait, he's only demonstrated so far that animals are capable of shrewd political calculations, you know, and I'm not that impressed. You might say, you know, what goes on in Washington is only slightly less nauseating than what happens on Wall Street. And so in subsequent parts of the interview, we'll raise the bar a little bit higher.
That will be coming up soon on this special interview, Age of Empathy, with this new book that is just out, so soon out that we're catching it before the wave may be catching it. We're guessing that this may be a Best Times, New York Times bestseller at some point sometime soon, but you're hearing about it before most people do. And we'd like to hear from you hearing about it here at 303-449-4885.
You know, I don't think you would hear this story on the alpha male radio stations. You know, it's only places like KGNU that try to find these stories that, you know, you may not hear on most of the other corporate radio stations. And the only reason that we can bring it to you is because of the listener's support. It is because of you that we can dig down and find these stories before they've made a splash even, and give you the chance to pledge your support and get the book and even get ahead of the curve there as well. So if you wanted to get a copy of this book and to be able to read it and get ahead of that curve, you can do so with the pledge at the $60 level if you call 303-449-4885.
Like I was mentioning earlier when I checked out Franz Dewell's Facebook page, and I encourage you to check that out if you really like what you hear. You know, other media sources in a sort of what I would say is a naive attempt at objective balance and fairness say, I know this debate. This is the debate between scientific evolution and creation science, and we're just going to redo that fight over and over again. And I can tell that Dewall is a little bit weary of that, because there are really interesting scientific debates that are going on, and that's something that How on Earth, the KGNU Science Show, takes you behind the sort of the false dialectic that the mainstream media creates and takes you to true interesting scientific arguments that are going on.
That's right, Chip. That is one of the points of a community radio station, is to bring you into the arguments, bring you into the discussions. And we're very grateful that you are our listeners, because we know that you're an astute, you're an intelligent group who appreciates this concept that what makes the world go round is not just aggression. It's not just territory. It has to do with how people cooperate. And if you look through time and if you look through history, you can see that in how many things that people have done to be together and make things happen and not have wars, not have times where they're only in conflict. What's amazing about this book is it's talking about how this is part of the animal community, that when an animal reads another animal's face, they can care about that animal. There are evolutionary reasons to care. There are reasons to feel what another creature is feeling, big and small, human and not human. Non-listener member and listener member. And if you're a non-listener member, we would like you to have empathy for us and the fact that to make this show possible and to bring you into the conversation, it does cost money. Our station costs money. The airwaves that we travel through the air to you on, it costs money for us to do all these things. KGNU is a remarkable place because it's mainly created by volunteers. The majority of people you hear on the air are people who take their time away from their own busy days to be here to share information and music and programming with you. But it also takes you, the person who's listening, to complete the circle by calling us here at 303-449-4885.
So where we left off, Franz De Waal had demonstrated that chimpanzees are capable of the same sort of a tit-for-tat reasoning that dominates politics. We now raise the bar a little higher. We talk about what our religious tradition says are God-given, exclusively human capacities for charity and mercy. And De Waal finds a compelling case for them in animals. So let's listen. And mere justice. It's been very important for them that the humans be distinct from all others of God's creations and having this capacity for empathy. So tell us a story of something that you've seen in primate behavior that you think makes a compelling case that they really can demonstrate empathy.
Well, we first need to say what empathy is. Empathy in psychology is often defined in a complex way, like I can put myself in your shoes, I can imagine how you feel in a particular situation. But actually, the beginnings of empathy in both young children and in animals, and increasingly that's also the view of neuroscience, and neuroscientists are doing a lot of studies on empathy. The beginning is that you are affected by the emotions of somebody else and affected by the situation of somebody else. That's where it starts. And those phenomena have been demonstrated in mice now, in dogs, in monkeys. So there's animal studies. And in very young children, for example, children already of 1 day old, they cry when they hear another baby cry, which is an emotional contagion which is related to empathy. We do our own studies on, for example, yawn contagion. Yawn, that you yawn when you see somebody else yawning is related to empathy. And for example, autistic children don't have yawn contagion, but most children do. And so you can study all these phenomena, and you start very simple. And if you start very simple, you will see that many animals have some form of empathy. Now, when you get to more complex forms, where, let's say, altruistic behavior comes in, which is closer to sympathy almost. Mm-hmm. We did an experiment with monkeys. And so I'm not going to tell you an anecdote. The book is full of anecdotes. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you an actual experiment that we did.
All right.
So we had two capuchin monkeys that we put side by side. We have many combinations that we test this way. And we have one monkey has to choose between two options. One option is a let's say, a green token that it picks, and if it gives it back to us, the monkey gets rewarded for that. The other one is, let's say, a pink token, and if it picks that one, both monkeys who sit side by side get rewarded at the same time. So the only difference for the one who picks the token, that one gets always rewarded, regardless of what she does, but the only difference is that the partner gets food, yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
Now, guess which token they prefer. If they are paired with a monkey that they know, they always prefer the pro-social token. Both of them want to be fed at the same time. If they are paired with a stranger, a monkey that they don't know particularly well, they pick the selfies token and they only go for their own food. So you can do this kind of experiments, and what they demonstrate is that monkeys do care about the well-being of somebody else. And even in this particular case, it doesn't cost them anything, so it's actually very simple for them. But still, they have that preference that they want to see the other one get something.
You also mention scientific evidence that primates, I'm not sure of all the animals, but primates in particular, are very sensitive to injustice. The idea that there are these experiments where there's a reward that can be shared by two participants in an experiment, and if one of the participants feels they're getting the short end of the stick, they'll kill the whole program so nobody gets anything rather than get stuck with an inferior deal. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, those things have been done with humans. In humans, it's called the ultimatum game and has been played by anthropologists all over the world, and humans have a tendency to go for fairness, is that if the deal is unfair, then the deal will be stopped by the one who feels cheated out of some share of it. With monkeys, you can also do this, or with chimpanzees, and what we do, for example, is we have two chimpanzees side by side, and they get the same rewards for the same task, let's say you give them a small piece of cucumber for the same task, and they're perfectly fine to do that task 25 times in a row. Now, if you give one of the two parties a grape, and the other one still gets cucumber, and grapes are so much better than cucumber, then the one who gets cucumber all of a sudden doesn't want to do it anymore and becomes agitated and throws the food out of the cage even. So they don't want to do it, even though a piece of cucumber is perfectly fine if the other one also gets cucumber, but it's not good enough anymore when the other one gets grapes. And so the primates, just like humans, object to inequity. It's called inequity aversion, which is basically a way of saying that they have some sort of sense of fairness. And recently the same experiment has been done with dogs. In a laboratory in Vienna, scientists have tested dogs on giving the paw for a reward, and what they found is that if you have two dogs side by side who know each other, they will do this many times in a row if you don't reward them. But if you start rewarding one of the two but not the other, then the one who doesn't get reward starts to object and at some point starts to refuse to do the task. And so also there they are comparing what they get compared to what somebody else is getting, and they object to it.
And there you go, Franz De Waal explaining how something that probably many listeners of KGMU you already know, that your dogs can display a higher form of empathy than is demonstrated by trickle-down economics, where they say, you know, you may get way less than everybody else, but that's better than nothing, and the rational behavior is to accept it.
It's interesting just seeing the parallels with human behavior. I'm sure many people have seen, you know, people have been happy with their cucumber for years, but as soon as they see someone else gets a grape, mm-hmm. they're not happy anymore.
Well, that's right. And the fact that it's an innate sense that fairness is important and that we share and share alike, I think is one reason why we do have listeners who call in and pledge at KGNU at 303-449-4885, is that this is a station that we all share. And by you making your contribution, you're part of the picture. You're part of making it happen. And those of you who are fans of Alan Watts, those of you who are fans of Democracy Now!, we often get comments that those shows are important to you, but also you like the variety and the fact that there's this whole spectrum of views and ideas that happen. We feel very fortunate on The Science Show to be here in between the news and spirituality. We think it's a good place for science. And if you agree, call us here at 303-449-4885.
Well, Shelley, you know, maybe at this point the listeners are starting to root for Franz De Waal. They like what he has to say. But, you know, this is The Science Show, as you mentioned, and so we must remain skeptical and maintain standards. I keep challenging him for the rigorous scientist, unlike the poet or the myth maker, unlike, say, Alan Watts. He does not succumb to the temptation of anthropomorphism. And I challenge De Waal on this, and let's see what he has to say. I'd like to ask you a little bit more about your ideas on the evolution of empathy. Earlier I mentioned religious doctrinal idea that it simply did not exist among the animals, and all of a sudden, with man and only man, it exists. I would think that it's doubtful if we think things like worms have empathy, but you said that demonstrate that dogs have empathy and primates have empathy. Talk a little bit about your idea, theories about how empathy has evolved.
Well, I think it started probably with maternal care, and maternal care is obligatory in all mammals. I'm not sure that before the mammals, if you go to fish and reptiles, you're going to... The reason I think we have in our homes, most of the time we have dogs or cats, and not, let's say, turtles or iguanas, even though turtles and iguanas are very easy to keep, but we don't have any emotional connection with the reptiles, partly because they don't have this empathy mechanism. So a dog is affected by your moods and is happy when you're happy or sad when you're sad. And actually, this has been tested on dogs. People have done experiments where they instruct family members to act distressed to see what dogs would do, and dogs respond to that. But I don't think your average iguana is going to do that. Mm-hmm. So the reason we have mammals in the home as pets is partly because we recognize this emotional connection, which stems from empathy. And I think empathy is going to be, has been found in mice now, and is going to be found in all the mammals, and probably also in birds, even though on birds we have very little data on that.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that when I learned about the philosophy of science in school, I was told scientists had to be very careful of it. This idea that, in contrast to, say, literary metaphor and mythology, we often like to take intentions and traits that we have and project them onto phenomena of nature. We'll say that a forest is menacing, or that, you know, a storm is malevolent, or the gods are angry. And so that we have to be very careful not to anthropomorphize, if I said that word correctly, and not to project things that are in our own minds onto others. I imagine that a lot of people that are skeptical of your research and claims are very concerned about this idea of anthropomorphizing and projecting. What do you say to address their concerns?
Well, I think the whole obsession with anthropomorphism, which is prominent in studies of animal behavior in psychology, that whole obsession is partly a reaction to the Darwinian notion that there's continuity between humans and animals. And so as soon as you say, for example, my dog is jealous, people will say, oh, you cannot say that because that's anthropomorphism. Whereas I would say that if you have species that are closely related, let's say a human and a chimpanzee, after all, we know that they have 98.5% identical DNA. That would be extremely closely related to chimpanzees. If species are closely related and they show similar responses under similar circumstances, for example, chimpanzees, they reconcile after a fight by a kiss and embrace. Now, if they do that kind of thing, you have to assume that the psychology behind it is similar too. Otherwise, you're going to assume that two very closely related species evolved in a very rapid time, because there's a very short time between the two, very different mechanisms to arrive at the same behavior. That's not a very elegant assumption. And so the Darwinian will always say closely related species, the psychology is probably similar too. And that sort of negates the whole idea of that anthropomorphism is bad, because that means that terminology that we use to describe human behavior is actually quite applicable to primate behavior. It doesn't absolve you from the obligation to do tests and experiments and observations to make your case, to call it, let's say, reconciliation behavior or jealousy or whatever the term is that you use. So you still need to prove that. But it is a safe assumption that the psychology is going to be similar.
In fact, I think there is a interesting historical notion that you mentioned in your book, and that is the idea that people attempted to use very clinical language when describing animal behavior, and they had this idea of bonding to be careful not to anthropomorphize, and it was such an effective term that it ended up leaking back into the common vocabulary.
Yeah, so that's sort of amusing almost, is because people working with primates or other animals, they did not want to use friendship, they did not want to use the term buddies or something like that, or pals. And so they thought we're going to use a neutral term like bonding, and they started using that maybe, 50 years ago. Huh. And now the term has become so popular in human culture. We speak of male bonding and father-son bonding and whatever. Mm-hmm. It has become so popular that now we probably, for animals, need to drop it.